This is the Canucks Central Postgame Show.
Leaves for Best on the hash marks. Back to Hughes. One time drive. He scores! Sprong to the right side. Kochetkov out of the goal. Missed the puck. Sprong. Left circle. Suter scores!
With instant reaction from the players and coaches.
Puck check by DeBrusk. Got it loose to Gostisbehere. High slot. Through to the goal. It's tipped off. Rebound. They score! Sebastian Aho wins it for the Hurricanes. The initial deflection was stopped by Lankinen, but Aho was unguarded at the front of the net to tuck home the rebound on the backhand. And in spite of the fact they blew a two-goal lead in the third period, the Hurricanes hang on to win their fourth straight. They take it 4-3 over the Canucks tonight in overtime at Rogers Arena.
Have your say on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Canucks come back from a two-goal deficit in the third, force overtime, but lose 4-3 in the extra frame against the Carolina Hurricanes. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satir Shah with Bick Nizar. We are going to bring in Brett Festerling into the conversation in just a moment to break down this overtime Canucks loss and get your thoughts in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. It wasn't the best performance for the Canucks for the first half of this game overall. Carolina Hurricanes had the edge in play, but the guy who kept him in the game was Kevin Lankinen. Outstanding performance between the pipes for the Canucks, keeping them so close. They come back from that two-goal deficit in the third, and it looked like they may have won it late in the third period as well. Both JT Miller and Elias Pettersson, great chances net front, just couldn't bang them home, and they lose in overtime on a Sebastian Aho goal. Before we get to a lot of this reaction and bring Brett into the conversation here, Bick, it's one of those games where, you know, it was right there. As bad as the Canucks were early on, they had a chance to win it very late and just couldn't get it done.
Yeah, I think on the totality, we'd probably say Carolina were deserved winners here tonight. But look, it's early part of the season. You rescue a point. There are positives to take out of that. But overall, there's going to be a lot of discussion on, hey, what can they improve upon here, Brett?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing is they got a point. I think if you take the last 20
right
for a third period to claw back from two down against a team that is extremely frustrating to play against and just their system, I think that's a positive. Now, is it the best game they've ever played? No. Are they going to need to be better against, especially teams that pressure like that? Yeah, of course.
This is an entirely forgettable performance 6 weeks from now.
Yeah, I mean, hey, it's early parts of the season, and I did not like a lot of what the Canucks did, and especially some of the things that Talkett has spoken about, and we've talked about this over the past few weeks, Brett, that structure-wise, the Canucks have not been quite as tight. Their rotations at times haven't been as good, and they haven't protected the middle of the ice as well as a coach had hoped. Now, they've shown some improvements, but even their last game against the Pens had some good chances. You know, the Canucks had a two-goal lead. Malkin made it a one-goal game late. Ends up being, you know, a 4-3 victory despite being down two goals in that game. So it hasn't been overly clean. And this Carolina team, if you're not clean with your structure or a little bit off with your rotations, they make you pay, and that's exactly what happened the first half of this game.
Yeah, they just go. Like, nobody questions it. That's what makes it so hard, is D-man's going. It's the forward's job to be back, and you're going to have back pressure. Like, there's no question, not a stand-up, do I have numbers, but it's just go, go, go. So it's just everybody's so committed to it. You can see why they have success so much during the regular season with that amount of pressure.
Okay, so it's that bit where he said during the regular season. Because I do feel like in the regular season, teams aren't always focused on the opponent, right? And even Rick Tocchet referenced, hey, focus on ourselves, and you go into the games like this. In the playoffs, again, this is a bigger discussion. They haven't had third-round success. They haven't even won a game the third round through this entire Brendan Moore stretch here. They've been to the conference finals twice, but they haven't won a game. During the season, you can see why they have so much stress, the success. And even in a down season for them, you know, roster-wise, their top six doesn't look as fantastic as it has in previous seasons. But you just see the way they play is always going to work in the regular season. They're always just going to be, at worst case, I think, flirting with a wild card.
Yeah.
Because it's exactly that. It's like all three goals prior to the overtime one, rush, turnovers, quick score chances. You game plan for that in the playoffs. Teams have had success against them, but it's tough to play them in the regular season. Like, it really is. It's a challenge, like, I would honestly say, like, no other during the regular season.
Yeah, like, after watching that, I would love to just go through their numbers of injuries Not that they're overly physical. It's just everybody skating and going forward and getting into body. It's not necessarily huge hits, but it would be so taxing. I don't know how you would ever dial that up to a playoff and then maintain it through whatever, 20, 25 games. But, you know, they really do bring it from the puck drop.
It's really enjoyable to watch from October to April. I'm not certain it's going to have success in the playoffs, but nevertheless, like, it's fun to watch.
Yeah, I agree. They're good at what they do.
Yeah, no, they are. And I think it's one of those things, too. It's early in the season where I'm not overly concerned. I think a lot of things the Canucks are going to clean up, and this is the type of caliber of team you will be facing, you know, in the postseason, and hopefully things go well enough that you're there. I did like, though, you know, whatever you want to call it, character or grittiness and to come back in the game and not give in. And that's something this team has had a trade of. We saw it last year too, multiple goal deficits they came back from, even against the Penguins. They were down two goals and came back to win that game. And I think that no quit attitude is a strength of this team, and it did get them a point here tonight.
Yeah, and they got the firepower to do it.
Yeah.
On top of that, you know, you can trust guys like Besser, Miller are going to push into it. Hughes obviously was, you know, fantastic again. Hronek made some amazing play. That play actually for the one goal, the rink wide.
The Hughes goal, yeah.
Oh, that was a beautiful pass.
It's an uncontested entry for Miller because of that pass.
Yeah, exactly. And then Miller does a nice kind of fake draw pass to get the Carolina guys to guess. But the guys I also liked was like Branstrom. You really saw his wheels and where he can add just that pressure to get pucks going north. And he was if he wasn't the guy getting it, he was the guy ripping through to the neutral zone and adding to that. Baines got moved up through the lineup. He had a really good game.
Yeah.
So I think there was a lot of positives in there as well.
Well, on the back end, I think one guy who has been impressing, and we saw him play a bit more in the third, was Erik Brännström. You saw the coach kind of put the bottom two pairs in a bit of a blender. You saw Desharnais with Soucy, you saw Myers with Brännström. Brännström played on the PK. Mm-hmm. You saw that in the second period. You saw him play late in the game, down a goal, and also when they ended up tying it. Yeah, just over 15 minutes. It's not a ton of ice time, but situationally, mm-hmm. he got some pretty key shifts here, especially late in this game.
Yeah, big time. He was a big part of pushing that pace in the third.
Yeah.
And getting it going north. We talked about getting it going north, how they need to be more direct and deliberate at what they're doing, and he did that. So I think he brought that. His skating stands out so much. He's such a smooth skater. He's so quick. It allows him to get in and out of situations so fast. And, yeah, I mean, if he plays like that, he should be in the lineup.
And in the context of this game, Jamie and I were contrasting two plays from the first period where it's the Carrier goal where Desharnais doesn't have to take the puck out from behind the net, chooses to, almost skates himself into trouble, and then sends a pass into two Hurricanes out to the other blue line. And then later on in that period, Brännström, same thing. He's behind the net. There's no active player coming behind the goal line to chase him out there, but there's four Hurricanes in the zone. And so he just says, you know what, I'm just going to wait. There's nobody coming after me. I'll just wait. And he waited. And it was honestly like a good 5-6 seconds. And finally, he hit Sherwood really deep.
Yeah.
But it's just that moment of, hey, I don't need to have the urgency if they're not pressuring me. I can wait for a moment. And just that restraint for a guy who probably wants to go, go, go all the time.
Yeah.
I thought that was a nice sign of maturity in that moment.
Yeah, for sure. Patience. When you get in this mindset where you want to try to make something happen, that's when you start skating. But by Desharnais skating into the corner, if you're on the other side, on the D side, like, he's got nothing left. He's going
up the
wall.
That's your trigger to start closing everything, right?
And then that's where it turns over, right? He fires it up the wall trying to spring it, and it ends up coming back really quick. And that's how Carrier gets his goal off that rush there, one-timer. So it's easier to read that way. Brännström does have that patience. It's more risk.
Of course. But
he's less risk averse. He'll go to it, but that makes him good in those scenarios.
But I just feel like it would have been easy to fall into the trap of, hey, this game's so high tempo. Obviously, we know Carolina's going to push the tempo as well, but he was willing to just sit there. It's like, no, I'm going to wait till it's right.
Yeah.
And just to see that growth. And he got more minutes tonight than we've seen throughout the course of this season. Just trying to bring up his overall ice time here. He ends up playing 15:07. And it was probably deserved, right? He's been hovering around 13, got 14, but it was deserved that he ended up getting more than Desharnais today, who played 12:33.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Desharnais had some trouble getting the puck out at times. And the coach said he was considering perhaps bringing another defenseman in. It would have been Juulsen because Forbert wasn't ready to go. Ultimately didn't, but I wouldn't be surprised if we see Juulsen come back into the game on Wednesday when the New Jersey Devils are in town. The Canucks' best player tonight, though, was their netminder, Kevin Lankinen. And I think he's probably been the Canucks' most impressive newcomer so far, considering how important a role he's played. And, I mean, he's making a salary under $1 million, and he's playing like a number one goaltender right now. The level of confidence that he has, but the players have in him, it's pretty telling, isn't it?
Yeah, it's huge. I don't even know how to – like, the fact that he was available in September and he's playing this well for this price is unheard of, right? It's crazy. So it's – the team's playing well in front of him. They show confidence in him. He comes up with massive stops. He had five amazing –
stretch saves.
Stretch saves, that blocker save shorthanded in the third, like, to keep him in it. He's standing on his head. Yeah, what a signing. It looks great right now, that's for sure.
So the PK, was the PK good or was Lankinen that good?
I think a bit of column A, a bit of column B.
It killed a 41 second 5-on-3.
But certainly in high moments of danger, it was Lankinen that was there. A couple of another stretch plays to his right, both on the 5-on-3 and on the ensuing 5-on-4 at the end there. But man, we commented, like, hey, if he had a good performance and they win, does it carry over? Does he get the start the next game as well? Even in a loss, man, he was fantastic. I know it's four goals behind you. Now, the third one is a 3-on-3, but he was fantastic. Like, he made six desperation saves that really protected that point.
Yeah, it really did. And, you know, we'll see if Shilovs gets in on Wednesday. The coach hinted that he won't be sitting for too long. But Shilovs is going to have to play unreal to try to wrestle back the starting job. And, hey, it's still early parts in the season, but it really feels like this guy has a bit of a stranglehold in the position for now.
Yeah, when you play like that, you know, I mean, it's nothing against Shilovs. That's part of the business. That's how it
There's only one crease.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what makes, you know, that pushes you and motivates you and makes you be better. But Lankinen's been great, and he is really taking the ball and running with it right now.
He really has. The PK was great. Lankinen was great. The power play, though, that's where, you know, they've had some moments this season where it's looked like it's getting going. I thought their first game of the season, the power play looked dynamite. Since then, it hasn't been great. Last game, you know, they got a little bit better. They had some moments with Garland, but it just seemed like they couldn't really get set up and didn't really have many quality looks here on the power play today. I think some of the best chances they had was that one, you know, Hughes had the shot on the point and Miller was going in for the rebound, but that's pretty much all they had on the power play. It was Daniel Sprong had the one shot, I think, and that's pretty much on the second unit.
Yeah.
I can't really think of too many good chances they had on the man advantage.
If you want to work on the power play, this is a tough team to do it.
Yeah.
Because they're already a team that goes 100% everywhere. Mm-hmm. And then any handcuffs they had on that just gets completely taken off on the kill. And they're going full. And then they didn't get a lot of shots. Like the Seattle game, all their power play opportunities were shots that came. And that made everybody have to come back to the net and scramble and figure it out. That seemed like that's where Carolina's weakness is. Vancouver didn't really get shots or cause that much chaos. If a one shot came in, it wasn't two and three. It was just kind of one and done.
It was something that was on my mind, and someone sexted in about this as well. Why isn't Pettersson more involved on the power play? He used to be the focal point of the lethal one-timer. I think this could really get him going if they feed him. We haven't really seen the one-timer far this year. They've placed him in different spots. I like him at times in the bumper, but we saw even today he got the puck in the bumper with his back to goal. Now, I don't know if JT gave him a lot of options when he fed him the puck, but nevertheless, you can probably make a better pass than putting it off a stick. And just in general, like, I don't know if they've solved this new version of the intended dynamic power play. And look, there have been hot flashes where the first game of the season, last game, obviously, they convert on the power play, but it still looks like a big work in progress. I don't know what the solution is right now with Pettersson on the power play in particular.
No, and they line him up a few times for that one-timer right off the draw, which I actually love,
because
it seems like when he gets one of those, it seems like it's confidence building for him, and then he ends up shooting more. You know, it always seems like he needs to get over that hump to get that first nice shot off.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, yeah, I can keep shooting these kind of thing. So, I mean, I don't know. I've seen – they are good when they are dynamic in terms of they're in and out of different positions and they kind of interchange and create that chaos and then take advantage of it. But right now, it doesn't look very confident in a set structure.
Well, and that's on the power play, but also 5-on-5 and overall in the game tonight. Pettersson played 16:38, which is a bit lower. I mean, it's about 3 minutes lower than what its average has been so far this season. But what was really interesting was in the first period, he only played 3:46, which was the second lowest ice time for Canuck players behind Nils Högnäs, who had 3 minutes and 7 seconds. I thought that it was strange. Do you think? I mean, it wasn't like there was a penalty filled first period. Is that just the coach liking other guys, trying to run four lines? Because JT played 21 minutes tonight, 20:59. Yeah, I thought it was interesting that Pedersen's ice time went down pretty significantly tonight.
I mean, without dissecting the game again to watch it, I would say the players that were more north players got more opportunity tonight.
Yeah.
You know, PD can be very east-west and want to get and try to make plays and slow it down and kind of back up and see what's there. And I feel like that just gets so stymied so fast against this kind of team. So it maybe had something to do with that.
You know, it's funny, Seth. Before our shows today, we were just discussing how, you know, we've kind of lost the plot at times when it comes to conversations like Pedersen, because there's really no middle ground. People are either like, hey, he's really good, or scratch him, get him out of the lineup. And there is a middle ground that exists somewhere, but it's very subtle. It's instead of being a 19 or 20-minute player, make him a 16-minute or 15-minute player. And it's probably not the punishment, I use quotations there, that fans want to see that are, say, get him out of the lineup. But 16 minutes, like, that is kind of a subtle message to be sent that here is, we're chasing this game, we need goals, but you're not getting out there very much.
No, and some teams don't do it anymore, but these sheets, and people can't see this, but we get these sheets of everybody's name and all their stats and all their amount of shifts and total time and power play shifts. This comes into you at the room.
Yeah.
The guy comes in and hands this out, and usually everybody's on the bike doing their cool down, and you get it. And a lot of people look at their ice time and stuff, and a lot of guys are going to notice that PD was 16 minutes. So it is for sure a subtle kind of nudge.
Well,
you got to be better.
Well, look at this. So Pedersen had 20 shifts tonight. Teddy Bluger had 23.
Yeah.
Now, Bluger ended up playing 15:42. Pedersen was 16:38. But as far as shifts, there were three more shifts for Teddy Bluger. So tonight, Teddy Bluger was the second most common center behind JT Miller, who was running away with it with 25 shifts. And obviously the defensemen are going to play more, have more shifts. But for the forwards, you know, and again, it's not like, you know, he was banished to the fourth line and barely played. But it is noticeable, like you said, in a game where you're trailing, and here's this guy only playing 16 and change, considering you scored a goal the other game, too.
Yeah. Now, he does have a minute 43 shift in the third period. That's power play influence, obviously. And then there's another minute-long shift late in the third period as well. But, you know, noticeable that it's not heavy, heavy usage there, 5-on-5.
16 minutes and two shifts or 2.5 minutes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and you know, people have been texting in. Lotso said, let the PD bashing begin, because, you know, that's how it goes. But said, I thought he was, and he didn't mean it to us. He just means,
because people were
texting in. And said, I thought he was decent, but not his cleanest game. This text here says, from section 304, it looked like PD played well tonight. Would like to see more from our $5.5 million man, though, referring to Jake DeBrusk. I mean, DeBrusk probably should have scored. He had the one chance. He just couldn't put a pass.
That was actually a really sharp play, because he battles. He completely shields off Slavin at the blue line.
And it cuts right in,
takes
too.
The puck. Was it off the wall?
It was off the wall from Hronek. That was a Carolina
play. That was a great pass by Hronek,
That was bang, bang. They didn't even think about it. Bank off the wall. He's doing it. And then power move.
But in one move to shield, take, and then take that play hard to the net, that deserved a goal. It was very unlucky they didn't get the goal on it.
And to the texter's point about, you know, the Pedersen, that he thought Pedersen looked like, he had some moments, right?
Yeah.
He had the two net drives. He had the one late where he gets knocked off by Svechnikov when he finally got around. Looked like he had open at the shootout. The other one was off a Garland shot. He drives the net and couldn't beat Kochetkov. So he came close a couple of times. Like, he was in and around the play. But, you know, when we're talking about Pedersen, it's not just about being in and around the play. It's about there's another level that he can attain, and we haven't seen that yet this season.
Yeah, I mean,
it is what it is.
We haven't. I wish I could reset a bar. Mm-hmm. You know, we just got spoiled with this P that was incredible, and now I kind of have him set at pegged to the standard, which I think is fair with his contract.
100% fair, and also the expectations, and honestly, like, the mindset of the player. It's not as if Pedersen's like, oh, you know what, I'm just going to be a 60-point player now.
For sure. Well, I mean, like,
high-achieving players going to want to keep following that standard.
Well, for instance, I did not think this was Quinn Hughes' best game, but what did Quinn Hughes do? He still had a goal and an assist. Right, and he came through and tied the game. Now he's a dash one. Not as, again, he had some giveaways. He wasn't as clean as he normally is. Didn't handle the puck as well as he does. But despite all that, there was a bottom line.
Yeah.
And I think
with a 92.6 mile an hour slap shot.
Right, and that shot was incredible. And like he had some games earlier this year, wasn't great, but the thing is nobody cares because he's producing and he's had a good start to the season. You can forgive a bad period or two. You don't really worry about it too much. But it wasn't like their star players outside of Lankinen tonight though really had that next gear. They pushed in the third, but I don't know if there was a standout performance from any individual Canucks star tonight.
No.
Some good moments. Merlo had a good moment. Hughes, of course,
Besser. He also took a penalty. He also had a couple of giveaways. He probably wasn't strong enough on one of the goals, the Roslovic goal.
Right.
Where he's on the wall in the O zone, and that puck squirts through, and out go the Carolina Hurricanes, and they work a pretty nice move around DeBrusk and Hronek. And, you know, again, the Besser scored a goal, but aside from that, had a couple of nice defensive plays, but the offensive play driving moment, and then Pettersson, look, we've had that conversation. It just, their best players showed up in flashes, I would say. And a couple of them obviously get numbers to point to production, but there's a reason we're sitting here saying, Carolina will probably deserve winners. And the only reason they really get a point, as much as it's Lankinen's success, Kochetkov makes this wild decision that really gives them the point more than anything. We've had textures about it. We haven't mentioned it. He was never getting to that puck. Even when it was bouncing, he was never getting there.
But Suter, he had two breakaways pretty much in the second. So I was like, thank you. Thank you.
If anybody deserved the goal, it was Suter. Yeah. I mean, two clear chances, couldn't finish either of them, but then gets the one where Kochetkov is too aggressive. Brett, great stuff, man. Always a pleasure having you on the post-game show and also calling games alongside Batch. Great stuff tonight. Unfortunately, it was a Canucks loss in overtime, so next one, you'll get the W, man.
Next one.
Next one.
Two-hour rule.
Yeah, exactly.
2-hour rule.
Wash it off and we'll
is
be
it, is it 1 hour for regular season?
Nah.
2 hours. Take your time. All right. And that was the game review brought to you by BC Honda Dealers. Love a good save, then you love the all-new, all-electric Honda Prologue EV. Score up to $8,000 in combined rebates. Visit bchonda.ca. It's Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. Canucks lose 4-3 in overtime against the Carolina Hurricanes. Get your thoughts in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. We'll get to your reaction on the other side. Plus, we'll hear from the head coach, Rick Tocchet, later in the postgame show right here. Brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Puck check by DeBrusk, got it loose to Gostisbehere. High slot through to the goal. It's tipped off. Rebound. They score. Sebastian Aho wins it for the Hurricanes. The initial deflection was stopped by Lankinen, but Aho was unguarded at the front of the net to tuck home the rebound on the backhand. And in spite of the fact they blew a two-goal lead in the third period, the Hurricanes hang on to win their fourth straight. They take it 4-3 over the Canucks tonight in overtime at Rogers Arena.
Canucks storm back in the third, not enough, losing in overtime against the Carolina Hurricanes. And you are listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. It's Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. The Canucks goal scorers tonight, Brock Besser, Quinn Hughes, and Pius Suter. And Pius Suter had two glorious breakaway chances, but finally scored after Kochetkov decided to come out for an expedition too close to the blue line.
Left the
net wide open, and Sprong eventually got over to Suter, who scored. And we'll break the goals down for and against a bit more closely a bit later in the show. But, you know, a two-point performance from Quinn Hughes, two-point performance from JT Miller tonight, and also Brock Besser had a goal and an assist tonight as well. But I'd say, you know, as much as those guys contributed, not great defensively at times, a bit of a mixed bag from the Canucks star players and pretty much everybody not named Kevin Lankinen tonight.
The production masks some other issues, but hey, contributed to get a point. We were just saying in the break, that one point really takes some of the sting out of this performance, and I think maybe some of the ire from fans. It wasn't good enough, don't get me wrong, but at this stage of the season, it is about, hey, just pick up a point, pick up points, and just stay in the mix, and then smooth out your game, because at some point the talent of this team is going to take over and certain teams are going to start fading away. I mean, we're already kind of seeing it in Calgary. They end up losing 5-0 tonight to Vegas. But nevertheless, like that's just what happens in the NHL season. So stay current, stay productive as far as the standings go. So you rescue a point, even though it wasn't deserved, and you know, Kochetkov makes that decision. But nevertheless, they keep trending in a direction, but yeah, there's things that certainly can be cleaned up.
Absolutely. We'll get to your phone calls in just a moment. Let's hit a few text messages. Hannah says, the Canucks' breakout attempts compared to Carolina's breakouts were just kind of sad to watch over and over. At least we didn't lose 6-1 to Columbus. Yeah, I mean, that's a silver lining. I thought the Canucks did better with their breakouts in the third, especially once they started pushing back in the game, but you could see the difference in how clean the Carolina Hurricanes played tonight and how connected they were on their breakouts and all their rotations versus where the Canucks were. And it was a big reason why for at least the first half of this game, the Carolina Hurricanes really had the edge in play. And I think Hannah makes a good point about the breakouts being far better for Carolina.
Yeah, and they sat back a lot more in the third period with a 2-goal lead. And it wasn't just the breakout, but just the urgency in capitalizing on takeaways. You look at the Carrier goal, it goes from inside the blue line, or sorry, just outside their own defensive blue line, where they pick off a pass to Carrier stick for a one-timer so quickly. You go to the Natchez goal, right? It's off a face-off, and it's chipped out of the zone, and it's boom, boom, right to Natchez, who's in on a breakaway all of a sudden. And then you go to Roslovic, right? It's a hold in the Canucks offensive zone that doesn't happen, and suddenly it's a 3-on-2, and that play just looks so slick. But just in general, like, yeah, it's a good point. They're able to get out of their zone so easily. They probably are the best skating team in the league, and you have to be playing the way they do.
And that's why the rotations are so key. Again, we'll break down some of these goals and how they came about. But, you know, like we said, a bit of a mixed bag from their top players. Chris in Maple Ridge wants more out of Quinn Hughes, thinks the effort defensively hasn't been good enough, and wants more for the captain defensively. And, again, had 2 points, but not a clean game. What else are you seeing on the text inbox, Bick?
650-650. Into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. Jay and Poco, good old no finish PD, could have clutched up there for the win. He had all day to shoot that puck, waiting for the perfect opening, and then manufacturing it on his own. Why does he continue to look underwhelming? This one, unsigned. I think both goalies were too good, to be honest. We're good, to be honest, but I really think they should fix their power play. They can't even get in the zone. And this one, Fish Dancer, deserved to lose. Pedersen and Tockett need counseling. Carolina's goalie almost handed it over. That is Fish Dancer.
Yeah, I mean, hey, Kochetkov certainly did. Larry from Van City says, what a great hockey game. A bit of a comeback, just enough to squeeze a point from a game we were outplayed for the first half. Not only did the team show some grit, but the fans got the boys going. The fans in the third did a great job. I mean, again, like I think as far as the fans are concerned in this building the past couple years, outstanding. And again, very loud building here in the third, especially on Diwali night.
So one more text here from Alex in Mission. Can you explain the callback on the Baines goal? It looked like Carolina called a timeout and then a coach's challenge. Can they call a coach's challenge right after a timeout? So the only time you can't call a timeout is following a faceoff violation. No timeout should be granted to the defensive team following an icing.
Yes.
And also when a penalty shot is awarded.
You can't ice the penalty taker. Yeah.
So in this moment, there's also no taking away of a timeout from a challenge, from a lost challenge. It's now switched to a penalty.
Yeah, a timeout is irrelevant. Whether you have a timeout or not does not matter as far as your challenge goes. A challenge it only stands if you have a challenge, and if you win your challenge, and if you lose your challenge, you get a penalty and you no longer have a challenge to use in the game. But yeah, it was offside for those wondering too. The officials at the rink, their mics weren't working or they weren't connecting to the audio system, so we couldn't hear the calls, but it was called off because of offside. We'll get to exactly how that came about a bit later on. We'll get to more of the reaction on the text inbox, 650-650, but let's go to the phone boards, and we'll start things off in Vancouver, where we have Neil on the line. Neil, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts here tonight?
Honestly, it was a great game. It was fun to see the boys playing. It's great that we can score in bunches and come back when we're down. Not trying to rip on Petey. I know a lot of guys are looking at, but being realistic, at what point do we kind of remove him from the power play? Maybe honestly give him a night off, let him kind of take some time to regroup. And then realistically, it was kind of nice to see some ex-vets in the audience tonight. So Gary Volk there, I'd love to see if he's still involved in anything. But yeah, honestly, just at what point do you kind of let the guys reset and maybe take them off the power play, give some time back?
Thanks for the phone call, Neil. You know what? Off the power play?
I will say that's one of the more measured potential resolutions.
Take him off the first unit power play? I mean, yeah.
I at least understand that one.
Sure. Has he been the issue on the power play? I'm not sure necessarily, but as far as trying to send a message.
Solution.
Very fair, right? And we saw DeBrus come off of it as well. I don't think it's necessarily a bad suggestion.
Again, it would still surprise me, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, he's still playing.
But it would send a heck of a message. And it's more reasonable to expect that one than taking him out of the lineup.
Yeah. I mean, the lineup thing, I just don't buy that.
It's
but as far
happening.
As off the power play, yeah, we'll see. Even that, I think when it comes to star players too, especially when there's already pressure, you see external pressure too, how much do you want to ratchet that up
sure.
on internally? And hey, there have been a lot of reports about what the Canucks may or may not be trying to do to motivate or get Elias Pettersson to play better. But yeah, we'll see. I mean, again, until he plays better, I think the criticism, he just has to accept it. I think people just have to live with the fact that he is going to be criticized. And until he finds that next level, this is going to be part of the conversation, unfortunately.
Only two shot attempts for him tonight. And
the best chance he had, he didn't even get a shot attempt off. It was late, and Svechnikov knocked him over. Again, like, he was close. He scores that, gets a game-winner late. Maybe it's a different story, but it didn't happen.
I feel like he's had game-winners against Carolina in the past.
He scored in the overtime, I think it was in Vancouver once.
The one on the broken stick, right?
Yeah.
He goes off the stick.
And he roofs it. Yeah. That's the one I think I remember, at least. It was here at Rogers Arena a couple years back.
Random memories.
And they can all blend in over the years. Let's go to Poco on the phone lines, where we have Dan on the line. Dan, thanks for calling in. What do you have for us tonight?
Hey guys, thanks for having me, first of all. I want to talk about the power play. And before that, just appreciation for you guys. This is half the fun of it, I think, just sort of analyzing the game other than watching
the
game.
Fun.
You guys sort of facilitate that. So you guys do a great job.
Thanks,
and thank
man.
You for that. The power play. There was a texter that a couple texters back was talking about breakouts, and like I saw a lot of that with Desharnais and whatnot. And I thought, that probably won't be there come playoff time, but this power play will be, and we know it will be because it's been there year after year. Nothing seems to change, and that for me is sort of confounding. Like I saw I have an actual. Hopefully, you guys will give me a minute. To explain how I think they can actually fix it. But
okay.
To steal a line from Jason Brough, like I feel like I'm taking crazy pills watching the power play because it's the same thing over and over. In the playoffs last year, it was the same thing over and over. Like we watched it, like game 7, 4-minute power play, no shots on goal. And it's like, it's the entries, it's the end zone. And what worries me or what's so confounding to me is why there's nothing. Like, they don't even try anything different. There's not even, it's like, not like they don't have answers. They don't even have ideas. They're not even trying. And I know they've, like, put Garland on now, and I actually like that because, like, one thing Talk has said is, like, they need to still have the wall battles and that type, the second chances, and he's a good retriever and all that. I think he's great for that. But I mean, speaking of the Edmonton series, I noticed last week that Edmonton, coming off a year where they had, like, a generational power play, like, 5 games in, they didn't like the power play. Knobloch was, like, completely changing it up. I'm going, how is it that we just keep doing the same thing? The entries, like, I don't know why they don't come in with speed, and if they can't, then dump it in. Get the PKers to turn and move before you make a first pass. You can't just come in over the blue line 1 foot and try to pass through a wall of PKers, especially when they know you're going to do it because you've done it for years. Anyways, I've said this stuff sort of like after games where the Canucks have been good as well. Like game 1 against Calgary, they scored a couple. Against Chicago, same thing. It's the process. It's the same. So last year they started hot, if you guys remember, and it ended up terrible. And it's the process is the same, right? So Okay, so I'll just get in, because in case you're going to cut me off, I just want to say what I think could fix it.
Okay.
I want to see Quinn Hughes off of the point on the power play. Not off the power play. I want him to quarterback it from the right half wall, like Henrik used to. And that's, I don't know if you remember going into last year, Quinn talked about getting closer to the net. And he became unbelievable at walking the line, and everything he's done, he's amazing. But he sort of stagnated in that he never did get the opportunity to get closer to the net. And the power play is his chance to do that. And if he's down the right half wall, he's closer to the net. He can cut to the slot and put the PK in a bind from there constantly, because he can walk them. He's special. And that puts the PK in a bind. They either back off and give him, let him walk in, and he's got a better shot now, or they have to take him, and that's opening up the slot or whatever, right? And that also puts, I want to see PD in the bumper. I don't think he should be handling the puck on the power play. He's got a great shot. Put him in the bumper. He can just, the only time he touches the puck on the power play is if he's lasering it from the slot, prime shooting spot. And that, and then leave Brock net front. He's been unbelievable there. He's changed his game. He's become unreal net front. Garland on the left wall, and that leaves Miller on the point. And I feel like people would say, well, that's going to create shorthanded chances against. I don't think so, because Quinn is still quarterbacking it. The puck's still going through him, and it's going through him down lower.
Yeah.
He can actually be more creative and not have to worry about being the last man back. He yeah. can do dangerous things.
I hear you. Hey, listen, great run there. I eventually have to keep – I appreciate a good run there, Dan, but good thoughts.
I get it. It's a lot. Thank
I got you, man. But I get what you're trying to get there. And honestly, we hear people say the power play is bad, do something different. The fact that Dan actually has a solution for it or an idea, I like that. And we've heard that before about playing Quinn on the half wall. I'm not sure I'm against trying things again. Like, the way the power play has gone, Vic, the power play ever since the second half of last year till now has really had a hard time finding anything. So when you get to this stage, I'm not against trying anything. I would say, though, they did switch things up a couple games back when they scored a couple goals on the power play on the road, and they had JT playing the right half wall. They had Pettersson go into the bumper spot, and you saw that create a couple of looks for them, right? The biggest issue I found today was they didn't even get set up.
Entries.
The entries. And I think forcing that draw pass sometimes is just something that they do too often. You saw Quinn Hughes do it once. He threw it into the middle, and there was nobody there, and the Hurricanes took over and went the other way. And on that same play, it was Pettersson by the near wall, by the blue line, wide open. He just moves it to Pettersson. He just walks into the blue line. Like, he walks across the blue line. Like, I don't understand why sometimes they don't take the play available to them. They're trying to, and it's like talk it says, they're already so set on doing something that they've thought about that they don't look at what's being given to them. And that's happening too much. Is that a lack of confidence? You know, I'm not against trying some different things. I would think, though, as much as I get what Dan is saying about JT being on the point and not being an issue, it does create some problems, especially on quick rotations and plays at the blue line. He's just not going to be as adept as Quinn is or as a defenseman is playing it. But honestly, at this stage, I'm not against any of those ideas. All right. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650, Dunbar Lumber. We'll get to more of your phone calls as well, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. We are going to get to the Canucks head coach, but that is coming up on the other side as the Canucks Central postgame show continues. Brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
This is the Canucks Central postgame show. Join the discussion on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650, and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Chaffee with a shot for the right point, kicked out by Lankinen. Hoglander sends it ahead. Daniel Sprong's on a breakaway. Sprong to the right side. Kochetkov out of the goal, missed the puck. Sprong, left circle, shooter, scores!
Canucks came back, tied the game late, forced overtime, but come up short, losing 4-3 against the Carolina Hurricanes. And you are listening to the Canucks Central postgame show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Keep getting your thoughts in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. We'll get to your thoughts and comments coming up in a bit, and we'll break down every goal that happened in this game, plus Ian McIntyre will join us in the final segment. But before we do that, let's go to the podium with Rick Tocchet, brought to you by Tiletown.
Well, Rick, first of all, what do you make of the resilience of your group to battle back and kind of turn the game in that third period?
Yeah, the last 10 minutes was great. But before that, you know, we have to learn. I don't think we were ready to play. Carolina was. They believed in what they were doing. Beat us to pucks. And we had a lot of guys early on not moving their feet, not winning battles. And then we decided to do the things, and we made a game of it. So take the positive out, getting to the point. But I still think there's lessons to be learned.
You made a couple of tweaks to your lines. You elevated Arsh in the third period. You elevated Brännström at times as well. What are you seeing from those two guys in particular right now?
Yes, skating. I thought those guys were skating a little bit, trying to get some guys going. So I just tweaked the lines.
Another start for Kevin Lankinen. Yeah. Just walk us through what he brought to the team tonight.
He's just been solid every time he plays. He gave us a chance to get a point tonight. So, I mean, I don't know if we had him for, he was the first, you know, for, yeah, I'm sure he got the first start tonight.
You said that you liked the last 10 minutes of play. What was the difference? Was it effort? What was the
difference? A little bit of effort, body position. You know, you're playing a team that's man on man. So when the puck goes somewhere, you can't watch the puck. You got to find your man to get body position. I'm a big body position guy, and we're not understanding. You can't let people jump by you, and that's what happens. That's why Carolina, the first period, were all over. So we decided to kind of a little bit more, you know, footy always calls it 5 feet. Get that 5 feet before they're 5 feet. Then it kind of turned, and we, you know, the crowd got us in. You know, the crowd was great tonight. We needed them, and I think it got us juice, but the last 10 minutes. So take the positive, take the point, and get out of here.
Two-man kill in the second period. Yeah. How big was that? Because it seemed like you got a little bit more juice after that, right after it, and then, of course, kind of carried it over in the third.
Yeah, I mean, it probably got us the point, right? It, you know, if they score, it's probably tough to come back from. So, yeah, that was good. That was a good one.
They're pretty tenacious. You got three of their goals tonight came off the rush. They had a couple of nice chances that they didn't capitalize on. How much, where's the level of concern in terms of giving up off the rush?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's early in the season, but we need some guys to take the information we give them and apply it. And we knew they flip a lot of pucks. As soon as they get it, they punt the ball, right? And so you can't dive in. You have to be above their guy. And what's frustrating from the staff is we explained to them for the last 2 days when you play this team. So I felt that a lot of couple of guys were diving in, and that's why they got those odd man rushes. Can't happen against, especially any time, but especially against Carolina, because they're very good at it.
You mentioned at morning skate the idea of seeing some of what Carolina does, how they play, you know, not like borrowing the ideas, being inspired by some of it, right? Do you see something similar in sort of how they're prioritizing attacking off the rush, sort of that your team's going through, just sort of trying to evolve to attack that way?
Yeah, well, Carolina's been doing it for 7-8 years, right? So the most of their team's been together, so that helps for them. We just need more guys to buy in when it comes to the way, you know, our game plan. You know, sometimes you don't have a play, you got to punt it, and you got to win your battle. You know, it's okay to do that through stretches. Nothing. Everything doesn't have to be clean sometimes. You know, I know everybody wants clean plays, but there's 10 guys on the ice. It's not going to be clean sometimes. So that's when you need the effort and things like that. So we'll get better at it. I mean, we'll chip away at it.
Your line with Pettersson, Garland, and Hoglander got separated, it seemed, as the game went on. And even before that was sort of the low line usage-wise of 5-on-5 through 40 minutes, for example. Just your commentary on sort of why you decided to approach your deployment that way and what you saw from that line tonight.
Well, it's obviously when you change, you don't like it, right? So I didn't like a couple things there. You know, didn't like Hoggy at all. Petey's, you know, but listen, I'm not going to pick on that line. I just felt that I wanted to make a couple of changes.
What did you see out of your power play tonight?
Yeah, we're going to have to make some changes. Not working hard enough. Very lackadaisical. That's a high-pressure team. We had the odd time when we had a couple looks. Actually, the game plan worked. When Hughes threw at the net, we had Millsy almost scored in front. That's the key against this pressure power plays, being able to make one or two plays and get it to the net. I thought a couple of guys there were playing slow. You can't play a slow against a high-pressure PK. You just can't. So we're going to have to make a few. I think I'm going to make a couple of changes. We'll talk tomorrow.
It sounds like both in discussing the power play and in how you want your team to go for the full 60, that you're looking for more consistency from this group. Is that a correct assessment?
Yeah, I just think you just got to stay, you know, focused on your task at hand. you know, you can't have those lulls. You know, I think sometimes we lose a little bit of focus, a certain part of the game, and then the next line loses focus. You know, you got to take out of the page of the book. If somebody's going to have a bad shift, I get it. Or maybe there are two bad shifts in a row, but we need that third shift to get back to what we're talking about. You can't pour gasoline on the fire. So, you know, but like I said, you know, I had one regulation loss, so it's not horrible. I'm not, you got to take the positive. But like I said, you know, you're going to start going later in the season, and we got to get a hold of this before, you know, if you're not playing well, you could lose three or four or five in a row if you're not careful. So I think we got to make sure we learn from these kind of games.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet at the podium, brought to you by Tiletown. From vision to reality, Tiletown has everything you need for your tiling project. See them today in Victoria, Richmond, Langley, and online at mytiletown.ca. The head coach, none too pleased. And I mean,
we always get an early season one that has some fire.
I mean, I love it when he has some fire because it's just great talking points for us to get into, right? Number one.
But also, like, he's so direct.
Yeah, honestly, I love his honesty, and I love the fact that he articulates. He articulates what he's feeling, what he sees, and he's not BSing anybody. If you're, you know, Canucks fans watching this game, you know what you saw, you know what happened, and sometimes when a coach comes up and tells you it wasn't what you saw, you're kind of like, come on, be real. And this guy's always honest, and I love it because we can actually dig into, hey, what did he see, and how can we evaluate this, and what are the things we should be looking for? What he mentioned at the end, and there's a lot to get to, and we'll dig through it here, and get your thoughts into text and inbox 650-650, but the stuff at the very end about if you're not careful, this is how you go lose four or five games in a row. Because I was talking about this before the game. I think the Canucks have done some good things, but even against Pittsburgh, it's like your game's not clean yet. And again, I'm no red flags. I'm not concerned, but you're early in the season. We've been saying 20 games in, we'll see exactly where you're at. Just collect points and we'll worry about it later. But their game hasn't been clean enough. And even against Pittsburgh, there's some moments where you're like, okay, the stuff that the coach is harping on, they've improved on over the course of the season at times, but they haven't put it together fully. And tonight, for large parts, against a team that is very good the way Carolina is, they really struggled. And if they don't clean this up, that's how you start losing games. So I understand what the coach is saying here. It's like, hey, we've picked up points. It's not bad. We're eight games in and we won four games. We have three overtime losses and the four losses we have. Like, everything is fine. But we can't be satisfied and happy because our game's not good enough yet. We have to be better as a team, and it comes down to a number of individuals.
If there wasn't significant confidence, and we just saw last year of guys adhering to the game plan, right, mm-hmm. and buying in. And buy-in for me is the first task every coach has to accomplish. Because I don't care if you're the smartest tactician out there in any sport, if the players won't execute it for you, then you're greaseboard, whiteboard, drops don't matter if they don't buy into you. And there's no way that these guys are tuning out the coach or anything like that. But it is interesting that Rick Tocchet said Carolina believed in what they were doing and we didn't so much. And mentioned you can't do these things about diving into the plays. We explained it to them for 2 days and guys were still doing it. And mentioned more players need to buy in.
He used the word.
He literally used the word
buy in. More guys to buy into the game plan. He was talking about the game plan, which they presented to the players. They felt good about. And all the things they said to focus on that they didn't do got executed the way they would expect if you weren't doing what you're supposed to do. So he was frustrated that he's like, they didn't do anything we didn't expect, guys. And if you would have listened to what we were telling you, you would be in a better position. Now, you got a point tonight. It's not all that bad. Yeah. They battle back. But the thing, too, is the standards have risen. And part of the reason, as much as, you know, the first game of the year, I thought there was a lot of, you know, excess criticism after losing one game. People were getting mad about everything. And I'm like, okay, one game in, we all need to calm down. But it's okay to expect more from this team. And the reason it's okay to expect more is because they expect more. The head coach expects more. They're not happy with, hey, we're coming along. Like, they want excellence. They want to be one of the best teams in the National Hockey League. And you can say whatever you want about Carolina. I have questions about their setup. I have questions about them in the postseason. But they are fully dedicated to how they play. And they executed consistently every single year. Sure, they lose some games here and there, but they never lose their identity. Mm-hmm. Almost never during a season do they lose their identity. And that's kind of where the Canucks want to get to. And he mentioned, talking that it takes years with the same coach to get there and establish that. But it also tells you, as far as the Canucks have come in a year and a bit with Tocchet, you still have a long way to go to get to that consistent level, and that's what they're striving for.
Yeah, I just I do like a press conference like that. Not just because, like, oh, hey, rips into the players, and it's fun. It's good audio. But, again, it goes back to it's very purposeful, the idea of why he's saying the things, the manner in which he's saying that, right? It's not, you know, raging at the microphone and doing the Dennis Green, like, we let him off the hook kind of thing, right?
It's not forceful,
but it's very intentional.
It's still in control.
Yes.
Like, as frustrated as he was, and this one here from Cam from Delta says, Tocchet doesn't often sound as unhappy as he did there tonight. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a bad game when he sounds like that. Yes, but at the same time, he was good. He was smart enough to not go into the Petey thing. He talked about Hoglander.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he said about Hoglander, I didn't like Hoagie tonight at all. And Petey, he stopped and he said, I don't want to focus just on that line. Which tells you he wasn't about to say something good, right? And then he says, we're making a change on the power play. You know, J-Dog, the Car Hawk, says that means Pedersen is coming off power play one. He gone. We'll see ultimately what the head coach does. He's mentioned maybe a couple of changes on the power play.
Can you do that again?
What? He gone?
He gone.
I'm just reading it the way he wrote it. I mean, because there's two G's, the two N's,
Fair enough.
I mean, you know. I'm just trying. I'm just trying to bring you know, life to the text message.
Yep,
that's all.
Yep.
Anyway. So
tone to text.
Yeah. Tone to text. That's all it is. Maybe Petey comes off the power play. I don't know. But he did stop himself. He criticized Hoglander. He brought up Petey, but he kind of stopped himself. But that does not sound like a coach overly enthused with a few players. And we can all kind of understand who those guys are
now. Yeah, so Hoglander winds up playing 12 minutes and 14 seconds. Zero shot attempts from Nils Hoglander as well. Connor Garland ends up taking four shot attempts. Even one of them was from the corner, if I'm not mistaken. Kind of a Corsi booster in that moment. But, yeah, there were some rough moments by that line. And they were the line out there for the Natchez goal, which, to be honest, all five guys on the ice I kind of had a problem with, where Pedersen kind of goes for a reverse hit behind the net on Orlov.
Oh, yeah.
But he definitely could have put stick to puck instead. And so that puck gets rimmed around. Desharnais doesn't really do anything to influence that chip out. And Quinn Hughes kind of gets caught in no man land, overcommits, and then Garland and Hoglander aren't skating to recognize Natchez is breaking through out of the zone.
Every single player made a mistake on that shift, essentially.
And they're varying degrees of mistake, but one leads to the next, to the next, to the next, and suddenly Natchez is clean through on goal and makes it a 2-1 game.
Well, the coach talked about diving in, and, you know, I'm not sure on that play specifically, there was a dive in. You want to call a Hronek one a dive in? He's kind of pinching in or along the boards, but you pinch in like that.
That was Desharnais.
Desharnais, sorry. Yeah, he pinched in, didn't make the play, and, you know, it's a bit of a trouble spot. Anything else that stood out to you? I mean, on Lankinen, he obviously said he should have been the first starter of this game. Was critical of the start of the game, how they played.
But
like the two-man advantage. They liked the kill on the PK. The PK was good, you know, killed off three penalties tonight.
No, the PK was the reason that they ended up getting a point, right?
That and Lankinen. Well, Lankinen is a big part of the PK,
he's a big part of that.
Yeah.
But, you know, 5-on-3, Bluger wind up playing over 2 minutes on the PK, I believe, tonight. Just trying to pull this up. Yeah, 2 minutes and 23 seconds. So he was unreal on the PK tonight. Someone who probably deserves a shout-out and someone who helped earn them a point. There aren't many, you know, heads tonight that are going to go under the bed, under the pillow thinking, good effort tonight. Bluger would be one of them to me.
Yeah, Bluger has been, honestly, one of the better stories, one of the least talked about stories. He's been terrific for the Canucks to start this campaign. And, you know, he had more shifts tonight. Not more ice time than Pedersen, but had more shifts than Pedersen, which kind of tells you about how the coach felt about that line and also how the game was going here tonight. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox. This one here says, great atmosphere tonight at the arena. Tough call to send DeBrusk over the boards in OT. Now Petey, we're paying the guy. We need to have faith in him. Can't wait for Dog Coda. That's Dustin from Chilliwack. Dog Coda, not Dakota, you know, for those wondering.
I follow.
You follow. I'm just making sure everybody else did. What else do you want to get on the text inbox before we hit the phone boards here, Bick?
650-650. Brandon in Vancouver didn't deserve to win that. I can't be mad. This one, unsigned. Positives, Lankinen, resilience, and Branstrom. Negatives, Petey, fluency, and lack of scoring from some of the top six.
This one's sad they lost, but great comeback and good entertainment. This one, need more speed. The team looks sluggish when the top guys aren't on their game. Thank goodness they came back alive in the third. I do wonder if some of the speed discrepancy, and I agree that they didn't look as fast as Carolina, but is it about Carolina's speed or is it about the Canucks' speed?
I think the Canucks can be faster than how they played tonight. I think Tockett's right. If they move their feet a bit better, they were stationary quite a bit tonight, especially in the first period. And that's why I didn't love their effort the first two periods at all. I thought they got caught a lot, not moving as fast. I do think the Canucks are faster than what they showed tonight. I'm not sure tonight was a true indication of the speed of this club.
Yeah, especially when you're not executing and not
executing against a team like Carolina, they make you look slow. They're on top of you the whole time, and that's what you saw through large parts of this game. This one here says, still playing over 600 winning percent. Everyone needs to chill. PP, defense, structure, bottom pair, D remain areas to improve. Of course, I mean, it's early in the season, like we said. You know, I don't think anybody's overly critical tonight. I mean, you can be critical of the performance, but also still be optimistic about the season. You know, you can do both of those things at the same time. I'm not going to use the same quote, but I'll just say that for the time being. Let's take a phone call or two. Let's go to the phone board, 604-280-0650. And we'll go to Surrey first, where we have our friend Jeffro on the line. Jeffro, thanks for calling in, pal. What do you have for us tonight?
Yeah, not much. I like the idea of striving for better. You know, like I was going to say, like getting points in seven of the first eight games is pretty good. But, hey, like we should be striving for better or a better team than that. So I like that idea. I want you guys' thoughts on Pettersson's skating. So I read an article about him not hitting his top speed burst, and he hasn't hit his burst. Like he's not going like he should be. I was watching a play tonight. It was 3 minutes to go in the first period. Delayed offside. I felt he could have just come back further and, you know, like or skated harder to get onside. Maybe his knee's bugging him. I don't know. Do you guys think that's an issue or, like, is that what's going on or what's happening? What do you guys think?
Hey, Jeffro, good hearing from you, man. Thanks for your phone call. Pettersson said at the end of last season that he had a knee tendonitis, he mentioned. Mm-hmm. And then he mentioned at the beginning of this year during training camp that his knee, he had to tailor some of his workouts and training over the offseason because of his knee. And it's not 100% gone, but he felt good. If you want to point towards an injury, the best evidence you have is probably looking at the speed discrepancy between now and last year. Does that prove a knee injury? I don't know if you can say it proves a knee injury, but it's certainly a strong correlation towards if, like, we don't have confirmation of what he's going through, okay? Like, putting it that way, I can't say for sure because nobody confirms anything when it comes to injuries nowadays, but I think it's a good indication of perhaps whatever he's dealing with is still there. Does that excuse his play? I'm not necessarily sure we can take that leap and say that. But do you think, Bic, that whatever knee injury he's having is hurting his overall game right now? To answer Jeffro's question.
Yeah, like of course. But we've mentioned this over the course of a couple of post games. If you're in the lineup playing top 6 minutes, you still have to produce. You're playing valuable minutes. You still have to do something on the bottom line. JT had issues. There was games where he put up 3 points.
Yeah.
If you're going to play valuable minutes, either limit the minutes, or if you're actually injured, like there's a difference between hurt and injured.
Yeah.
If you're actually injured, then you can come out of the lineup. I think a lot of people would understand that.
But I'd say this, though. I'd say if, you know, I'm not going to play doctor here. If it is a knee tendonitis thing, I'm not sure a week or two makes a difference, especially if the offseason didn't do it. So it's one of those things where it's like you probably have to deal with it. And if you got to deal with it, you got to find ways to overcome it. It sounds harsh, but it kind of is the reality of playing in the NHL. And I can understand.
It's the reality of playing sports, man. I remember hearing Brett Favre talk about this because he, Iron Man streak and all these things, he would go into the game injured. And it was like, I'm the quarterback of the Green Bay Packers. What am I not going to produce?
Am I not going to play? Yeah.
It's not even just about being in the lineup. It's like, you have to play well. You're in a top six role. You kind of have to do something.
And then the thing is, If the difference of quality was, hey, he's not playing at his absolute peak, but he's playing at like 95% of his peak, 90% of his peak, you're like, okay, you know what? Like, I can excuse that. Hey, you can't expect the guy who's dealing with something to be 100% of his potential, but I don't think he's near that acceptable line of where he needs to be.
You have to find another way to win.
I think he can be a better player than what he is right now, no matter what he's going through. And I think that's what we want to see from him. I don't need to see Pettersson go out there and skate like a win every game. I just need him to make a bigger impact than what he's done so far. That's all.
Leon Draisaitl had a high ankle sprain in the playoffs and found another way to produce.
And again, you don't have to dominate. And I don't think Pettersson's been all that bad either. Like, we're not sitting here talking about a guy who's been horrible, but there's more there, obviously, right? And I think that's a big part of it.
I just want to highlight the article Jeffrey was referenced. It was Patrick Johnson in Post Media, just talking about some of the edge data as well. And it was, I'm just going to read this verbatim here, but the skating so far, bottom 50% of the league. His top speed burst has been 34.2 kilometers an hour, below the league average at 34.7. And last season, he was above average at 36.7, with the league average being 35.6.
Yeah. So, I mean, those are the numbers available on NHL.com with their edge stats for anybody who wants to take a closer look at them. And, you know, it shows something. Again, it's a smaller sample size. Does it change? And is it truly indicative of him not being right? That's one of those things. You just have to come find a way to play better than what he has so far. And it's like, look at JT. JT, I don't think it was clean tonight. Tones texted in and said he was at the game. He wouldn't say PD was an issue at all. I find Miller this year has been way too high event, too many blind draw passes and lazy plays. Well, we saw how he struggled in overtime, JT. Not great. He had a couple of bad defensive plays. But JT had two assists. JT has been very productive this year. He had a game-winning goal as well, and he's had some really big moments. And he hasn't been great at times, but he's still producing, and the reason he's not being criticized is because there is a bottom line. And that's kind of the difference you want to see. We don't need Pettersson to be 100% and play like a star every single shift. JT's not doing that, but JT is playing big in certain moments and coming through, and Pettersson does that, even if he's not 100%, this team's going to be a lot better for it.
Hughes tonight is a perfect example.
Yeah, Hughes was not good tonight.
There are a lot of criticisms of Quinn Hughes tonight coming into the inbox, which is rare for Quinn Hughes.
But he wasn't great. It wasn't his cleanest game at all.
Yeah, he gets chalked up with two giveaways, and someone texted in, I don't know if I've ever seen Quinn Hughes give away the puck that much in a game. And certainly, I think two giveaways is probably...
There are probably some 50-50s, too, where teammate got the puck.
Probably doing some favor, right? The counting of giveaways is can be sketchy at the best of times, but... Yeah, he probably had more than two, but he still went out and produced 2 points. Still hits a 92.6-mile-an-hour slap shot that it ends up converting into a goal. So there is a bottom line there, and you can forgive a couple of mistakes because, you know, as much as we talk about process and results, the result of a goal matters a great deal in the context of a game, and he helped put two goals up on the board. So some of the giveaways and some of the lapses get washed aside when you're not putting up points. And Pettersson, you only have two shot attempts throughout the course of the night. Quinn Hughes, how many shot attempts did he have tonight? He had another 10 shot attempts.
He's been shooting the puck a lot.
Yeah.
And again, like, at least there's that side of it. So even when you have a bad game, there's this productive level coming out from it. What did you see in the text inbox? So,
I was looking at Quinn Hughes' shot attempts, and Kiefer Sherwood is right below him. Another 9 hits for Kiefer Sherwood.
9 hits? Oh, my goodness. Man, the guy. He's just so aggressive. I heard some of the Carolina media guys were here kind of wondering. He's like, are these like hit stats accurate on Kiefer Sherwood?
I wonder if he knows someone in the... the audit department of this.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I'm not sure too many were questionable. The guy's super aggressive.
Oh,
but
yeah.
The numbers are, I mean, these are crooked numbers he's putting up for hits so far this season.
Again, he was averaging over 7 coming into tonight. So he's boosted it. So he's up to 59 hits already this season.
100%. This text says, got to stay positive with the Canucks. It's a good hockey team. Let them find their game. Let them continue to work on their game. Absolutely. What we do on the post-game show is talk about every game, the good, the bad, and how it's going. I think for those listening regularly know that we're very high on this team. We think this team is going to be very good this year. They're going to figure all this stuff out. It's very early in the campaign, and it's working through things. But the reality is you got to call things like they are, and right now tonight, not the greatest performance. You heard the head coach give his comments, and I would expect the Canucks to be much better against the Devils on Wednesday. Let's go to the phone boards and let's take a phone call or two, and we'll start things off in Coquitlam in Bixhood, where we have Tony on the line. Tony, thanks for calling in. Now, what do you have for us tonight? Oh, Tony is gone, so we go to Chris. Chris, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts tonight?
Howdy, boys. How are we doing tonight?
Doing great, man. How are you?
Very well. Hey, I think... I won't harp too much on the, you know, everyone's kind of had some really killer points earlier with the power play and everything. I mean, it's a bit frustrating, right? The zone entries. I think that's the one thing. I mean, I had a buddy in town this game tonight, you know, watching it. And, you know, his two big comments were, oh, my God, the zone entries, man. And I think that's the thing that, you know, especially the last few years, we saw a lot of bad. And then last year we saw a lot of good, a lot of zone entries. And we could see how lethal this team could be when they got in the zone and set something up. So I think that's the frustrating part of tonight is, you know, that they can set those things up and they can have good opportunities when they get in there. But, yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Hopefully they can make those changes and get it all worked out. Like you guys said, it's early in the campaign, which I love that everyone's saying campaign nowadays. I don't know if that's the Shorzy effect, but it's a beauty. But I want to leave everyone on a high note. The stadium, that was the other comment from my buddy who's been out of town for a few years. He goes, man, can you, like, remember coming to a game in, like, 2018? And it was dire in here. And it's awesome to see the barn buzzing again. That's fun. It's nice to be a part of that again.
100%. Hey, Chris, great phone call, man. Don't be a stranger. Appreciate the thoughts here tonight. And always love hearing from fans that were at the game, too. Mm-hmm. And honestly, we've been going on about the crowd for a couple of years here, but for anybody who grew up in Vancouver and also went through some times, even when the team was good and there was more of a corporate crowd here and, you know, it was kind of quiet. They talk about Rogers Arena. It's kind of quiet. Now, when they score, it would pop off and be loud, but a pretty quiet building overall, maybe too corporate with how it was set up. It doesn't have that feel at all anymore, man. Like, it's people are having fun. They back the team. They do everything they can to urge the team forward. They're trailing in the third. They're cheering them on. There isn't, and obviously the team's been better this year, but it's a very supportive and loud crowd.
No, we were chatting about it the other day. I totally agree. The past 4 years, post-pandemic, when fans have been back into the building, Rogers Arena has been the place to be, and we keep extolling the virtues of the crowd, and the praise has been at the right times, the criticisms have been at the right time. It's a fun place to be, man, 41 times a year.
Honestly, and fans can make a big difference. When you bring that power and energy to the guys, especially when they need
it,
and it makes a big difference. Good on the fans here at Rogers Arena. All right, more of the post-game show coming up on the other side, plus we'll hear from Ian McIntyre. And the post-game show brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Post-Game Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Right circle for Robinson, send it back in front. Svechnikov is robbed by Lankinen. Natchez, high slot in your circle. Jarvis is robbed by Lankinen. Across to his right, he holds it out with the pad and covers it up for the whistle.
Kevin Lankinen, star for the Canucks tonight. The main reason why they were able to get a point, a 4-3 overtime loss against the Carolina Hurricanes here at Rogers Arena. Canucks were down 3-1 in the third, stormed back to force overtime. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. We are going to be joined by Ian McIntyre coming up in about 15 minutes or so. We'll try to get to more of your texts in a bit here, 650-650 Dunbar Lumber. And we are going to get to all the goals the Canucks scored and run down some details of this game and perhaps even some player audio if we get a chance. But let's hit the phone boards here before we do all that, and let's go to New West where we have Sean on the line. Sean, thanks for calling in, buddy. What do you have for us tonight?
Thanks for taking my call. I just came back from the game. You know what? Carolina, a really good team. I mean, we already knew that. I mean, really fast. They just come in waves. Really aggressive penalty killing. Even though they didn't score on the power play, they're really good at setting up. You know, Lankinen, you know, just, you know, he played pretty good, obviously. You know, he made a lot of grade A chances. You know, he stopped, right? And, you know, I'm happy at least we got a point because I didn't think we were going to get any points. So, you know, I'm happy we at least got a point. You got to manage your losses and you got a point out of this. So, really good there. And I guess the Devils, you know, it's going to be a tough matchup coming up, but at least, you know, they can make some corrections and, you know, try to get a better winning streak going. So overall, you know what, to take the point and move on. It's a lot better than, obviously, Bix, Seattle Seahawks. They got absolutely destroyed yesterday. So at least the Canucks, you know, at least they got a point out of it. So I hope Bix is coping well with the way that game went yesterday. But anyway, have a good night. Bye.
Thank you for your phone call, Sean. And you know what? I was just happy the Browns won this week because I knew.
Just to peel back the curtain here for a second, we were chatting in the break. We're like, all right, what do we got to do? We got to get to player audio, iMac, and we're like, who's on the phone line? It's like Sean in the US. It's like, he's going to make fun of one of our teams. I don't know which
one. Hey, the Browns won. The Browns
won.
That's
so funny. Well done.
I was ready for a Browns crack, and yeah. I was going to be like, you know what? 2-6, the AFC's pretty bad. You know, I'm not giving up on the playoff hopes quite yet. You know, that's
I was in the line of the fire there. Yeah, don't
you
worry.
Did. You took it. Seattle Seahawks.
They're 500.
Why were they so bad in the red zone?
Look, it's the Canucks.
All right, yeah, you know what? Yes. We don't need to revisit what happened to the Seahawks.
We have people texting in asking me about Man United. It's like, I'm here to talk about the Canucks game tonight.
That's what I'm here to talk about. All right, we have a lot of reaction on the text inbox. Greg says Forbert will help shore up the defense when he's back. And Forbert was good defensively. And, you know, he's back with the team now. For those who missed it, he sadly missed the last little bit with the passing of his father. A very difficult time, obviously. Our thoughts are with Forbert and his family. It's good to see him back with the team again, but he's gone through something, you know, very devastating and heartbreaking and difficult. So we're just hoping and wishing the best for him. When he's going to play, again, a bit early, he's missed some time, get his conditioning back, but whenever he does get on the ice, he will help them defensively. To the Canucks' credit, though, their PK has been really good this year. And Forbert is a great penalty killer. And before he left the team, like, he was a big reason why the PK was good. He was the guy who played the most on the PK and had a lot of success on it. But the penalty kill has been a real strength for this team. For all this talk on structure and things they have to do better defensively and even on the power play, the PK is showing to be a real strength of this team right now.
Yeah, 84.6% following tonight's game, which is a huge boost. It was 79.1% last year, and we were saying, you know, okay, that's a league average mark. Like, that's fine. It's hard to get to 80% nowadays with the way penalty kills are. Like, you have 80%. You're in the top 10 of the league last year, basically. Penguins were 80.7. They were 11th. Last year. Canucks right now sitting at 9th, but again, small sample size across the league, but if they're in the 80s, that's a huge boost from where they were.
I mean, massive. It's massive. And, you know, so far this season, the Canucks have one regulation loss, but they have four losses, and they picked up three loser points along the way. And as much as it's been uneven, the texter is right. Their winning percentage is over 600. A big reason for it, they're getting saves. They're getting penalty kills, and like Brad and Nanaimo texted in earlier and said, where would this Canucks team be if it wasn't for secondary scoring in the bottom six? It's, you know, those are the reasons why this team is, you know, where it's at standings-wise, despite not having anywhere near their A game. And that's a mark of a good hockey team. But like the coach was saying at the end, you heard the frustration in his voice, Bick, like, he doesn't want this stuff to continue too long because that's how you get into losing streaks, and that's something he really wants to stop. And hopefully they can do that as soon as Wednesday when they play the New Jersey Devils. Anything else you want to bring up on the text inbox here, Bick?
Dave, not the outcome I wanted, but at least we got a point. They need to be more aggressive and motivated to win the puck battles and hit more. Lankanen saved us from being embarrassed. Yeah, certainly. He made a lot of huge desperation saves, which, you know, again, aren't always the mark of a great goalie. You know, the desperate saves usually being squared up to the shooter in advance is a nice test, but he certainly kept them in it to earn the point.
Yeah, absolutely. And as far as how the goals were scored tonight, what we'd like to do on the post-game show, time permitting, is break down each goal the Canucks scored. We won't have time to go through every single goal, even the Carolina goals, but let's start with how the Canucks actually made this a 1-1 game in the first period after the Carolina Hurricanes had taken the 1-0 lead on a William Carrier goal. It was Brock Besser scoring, and, you know, what else can you say about Besser? 5 goals now through 8 games on the campaign, on pace to even do better than the 40 goals he had last season. And JT Miller, as you would expect, was the guy who set him up, and Quinn Hughes also got in on the action.
Yeah, we mentioned a play from Branstrom earlier where he was just willing to settle out on a regroup, but a lot of credit, and we talked about this on the intermission, about the third line prior to this. They put a lot of pressure on, they get some chances, and the puck goes out into the neutral zone, and just a regroup for Hughes and Hronek. But everyone has to go change, and so they can settle. Even the Hurricanes are changing. It's free access out of their own zone. And you see Miller wind up in this, and Besser goes stationary right at the center circle, and Hughes hits Besser, and it's a little touch pass right to a streaking Miller who's got all this speed. He goes right around Brent Burns, and he goes behind the net, circles the net, and DeBrusk crashes the near post, and all these eyes and attention goes to DeBrusk, and Miller finds the secondary window to hit a pass to Brock Besser, and Kochetkov kind of got stuck with the net, and he's on his butt, and Besser buries it for his fifth of the season, the first for the Canucks.
Yeah, and after that, the Carolina Hurricanes scored a couple goals and took a 3-1 lead and looked to be fully in control of the game until the third period, where the Canucks started tilting the ice in their favor, and that's when things started going their way. And you cited this earlier, but Quinn Hughes, his goal clocked in at
92.6,
which is his second hardest shot on the campaign.
Was the other one 92.3 or 92.7?
I think 92.7, okay. If I'm not mistaken. So just slightly higher. But he's been one of the hardest shooters in the league. Now, hey, there's some guys that can shoot it harder, of course. But Quinn Hughes' shot has become a real asset, and that is exactly what he used to bring the Canucks within a goal in the third.
Yeah, and it's a nice rink-wide pass here by Philip Peronik to JT Miller. We talked about like how challenging it is for the Canucks to get the puck on clean entries. With the way Carolina skates, right? They can challenge everything, but this pass completely wipes out a couple of layers of the Hurricanes' forecheck, and Miller gets a free access across the entry. He drops it off the boards to Brock, who sends it back to Quinn, who walks into this 92.6 howitzer that gets through Kochetkov, who you go through all three goals. Kochetkov kind of plays a role in all three.
He does. Now, it's a good screen, too. Like, yeah. It's not a uncontested shot. Like, there's some good traffic in front of the net on Kochetkov as well, and Quinn Hughes. You shoot the puck that hard, and there's traffic. It does increase your chances of the going again in it, and that's a big reason why we've seen Quinn Hughes put up bigger goal-scoring numbers the past couple years. And the Canucks kept the pressure going, and they eventually would tie it at 3 late in the third period on a Puse Suter goal. And I'm going to cite this text message here before you delve a bit deeper into this, Bic. And it's John in Fort Worth who says, I thought the adjustment Talk had made in the third was a big reason we got a point. Started sending a forward high to the blue line, which stretched out Carolina's neutral zone defense, which started to give them problems, John in the fort. And that's kind of a play you saw a couple of times happen late in the third. There was one play Hronik made to DeBrusk who cut to the net, and we talked about this with Brett Festerling and almost scored. And obviously the one that really paid off was the puck coming out and Daniel Sprong putting pressure on the line and getting behind the defense. Kochetkov comes out and I don't know what he was trying to do, but misplays it. And the next thing you know, there's an open net for Puse Suter. But I think John in Fort Worth is right. I think he's right as far as some adjustments, but I also think part of the game plan was we got to get behind their defense when they put pressure on us. And one thing the coach mentioned was, you can also flip a puck out and go and hunt it down. It doesn't have to be this clean, perfect pass, right. And that's what they were trying to do too often. But on that play, that pressure through the neutral zone, it worked out for the Canucks.
Yeah, I think there's some good fortune here too, because the rebound on a shot from Chatfield is kicked out by Lankinen right to Hoglander.
Yeah. And oh, yeah, exactly.
Not only did it go right to Hoglander, he was already positioned to look up ice. And it goes right
over
to his stick.
Yeah.
And also, Chatfield kind of eyed the shot. And Sprong is just gone immediately, and so this perfect lane just opened up. So I think there's some good fortune here, but nevertheless, the point is made of making some adjustments. I mean, quick out of the zone, and Sprong chases down this bobbling puck, and yeah, Kochetkov. I still don't understand why he thought he was going to get there.
But you know what? I thought that Sprong showed some good composure with
the
puck, though, because I kind of wondered, is he going to panic and just throw it towards the net on a bad angle? And he just held on to it. And just got over the Suter, and give Suter credit too. I mean, I think was it Burns who came across? I forget which defender it was.
Burns was the first one back.
Yeah, there was somebody who was coming across, and they almost blocked the shot on Suter too. Like, it wasn't that wide open for him by the time he got it. So both those guys made good plays. Sprong to get the puck over to Suter, and then Suter to finish.
Burns wasn't even on the ice.
It wasn't on. I forget which defender it was, but there was a defender coming across.
It was Chatfield, Orlov, Stahl, Jarvis, and Martin.
Yeah, you have to look at it again. Yeah. It was a Carolina player, was across, and you know, almost blocked the shot, but Puse Suter made it 3-3. And hey, the Canucks almost won the game on a few chances after this too, but did not get the puck past Kochetkov anymore as they went on to lose 4-3 against the Hurricanes. The one goal against, you know, we talked about a little bit, and we said, you know, where every single player made a mistake was on the Natchez goal. I think that was probably the best indication of how every guy tonight didn't have a clean game necessarily, because on that one shift, you know, Pedersen, we mentioned, he goes in to kind of throw a reverse hit, doesn't play the puck on Orlov, and then Desharnais pinches in, and same thing with Hoglander and Garland not skating fast enough, and Quinn Hughes being overly aggressive, going over to Drury, I think it was, before he got it over to Natchez. But, no, yeah, so I think, you know, tonight, those are the goals I'm sure the coach is going to go over as far as what he wants to see them do better. Each guy on that goal could have done a better job. But overall, Canucks got a point out of it, and that's how these goals came to be here tonight.
650-650, wrapping up in the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. You know what? We just wiped out a bunch of text messages here. All right. That's a tough one here. A lot of questions about Eric Branstrom and also Vinny Desharnais. Is he going to come out of the lineup once Forbert is ready to go? I would imagine.
Yes. I mean, I thought Desharnais struggled tonight. Yeah. And honestly, like, I'm even, you know, Soucy and Myers haven't been at their best so far this season. We were waiting for them to kind of find their game. I'm not sure tonight was the night where they fared any better than they had in previous games. And I guess, you know, as far as being a plus, Myers was a plus one. Soucy was a minus one on the evening. But overall, in their differentials, not a great night. We saw the D pairs change a bit. But I thought Eric Branstrom had a strong game. And for those wondering, Eric Branstrom showed he can play the right side in previous years with the Ottawa Senators and did so well. And the head coach even cited this, saying the analytics looked good, so they may explore with it. But how he played tonight, he was used in critical situations late in the third. He had a PK shift, Bick, a couple PK shifts. So yeah,
he went out for the final 30 seconds.
Yeah,
there. I think he got more time on the PK than the power play.
Yeah, the first unit was out for quite a bit on most of the power plays. They only had a couple opportunities, but on the PK, like he played a significant role there late in the second period.
42 seconds on the PK, 19 seconds on the power
play. There you go. So almost three times more. At least two times more.
Two and a half,
slightly more. I'm not going to do math on air. We're just going to leave it at that. But I thought Branstrom acquitted himself well defensively, was out in critical moments, just played over 15 minutes. But I would imagine whenever Forbort's back, you put Branstrom on the right side. Like, I don't take him out of the lineup right now.
No, not at all. Especially, like, The Desharnais project has not gone as well as
and it was going to take time.
Like, sure,
listen,
yeah.
Listen, Bick, people who listen to this show know that neither you nor I...
We're measured.
Neither you nor I love the Desharnais signing, nor did either of us really love the DeBrusk signing. Like, we like the players. We think there's some potential there, but both guys are projections. DeBrusk, and it's, you know, I think he's still a work in progress. It wasn't just about, can he show up and be a, you know, 20-goal player? Can he be more potentially? Now, they're paying him $5.5 million on a 7-year deal. It's a lot of money, but it's not money you're expecting for a guy to score 30, 40 goals. But can you get above 20, 25 more consistently? And he's yet to score a goal for the Canucks. But it's a projection. He has to get to that level, which means he probably won't get there in day one. And as much as I have questions about Desharnais, it's not like he was going to figure it out on day one either. Both these guys were going to take time in their new surroundings to play to another level and find another level with the Canucks. It wasn't going to happen after 8 games. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, I don't like these guys. I don't think they're going to work out. I don't think that's fair. I think both guys are going to be fine. It's going to take some time. The question is ultimate potential. And so far, we haven't seen indications of them being significantly more than what we thought they would be coming in. That's DeBrusk being a second line producer, Desharnais being a third pair, 6-7 defenseman. Can he be a number 5 defenseman or 6 defenseman more regularly? Can DeBrusk become a first line scoring winger, or at least become a 25-30 goal guy? I don't think through 8 games we can, you know, say with any certainty what it's going to be. But I think Desharnais, the reality is it's going to be a bit of a project. It's going to take time. And tonight, he did really struggle.
Yeah, and to be honest, like, my biggest excitement with Desharnais was on the penalty kill, right? Some of his underlying numbers through his time at Edmonton were fantastic on the penalty kill, but there were concerns about what happens 5-on-5. And, yeah, there were elements tonight that showed up of all those fears. But right now, if you're asking me if Forbert's ready to go next game, we'll see if that's a reality. The expectation from my vantage point is it's Hughes, Hronek, Soucy, Myers, and Forbert and Branstrom as your six. And honestly, probably not enough focus in general on Soucy, Myers. Now, I don't believe they were on the ice for a goal tonight. Sorry, they were on the ice for Soucy was for the Carrier goal.
Yeah.
But like they,
Myers was a plus one.
Yeah, they've probably drawn more attention in general so far this season.
Yeah. I mean, and as far as Brännström staying in the lineup, Tarek and Kingston says when Forbort draws in, Desharnais should come out, not Brännström. And I would imagine, like we said, the way Brännström's played, he's earned himself at least a few more games. All right. It's time for that portion of the show where the star comes in to close it. The man we call the triple threat. You watch him on TV, you read him on digital, you're about to hear him on radio. He is Ian McIntyre.
How much do closers make in baseball?
The good ones?
The good ones? Like lots. Almost $20 million, I think.
Oh. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, the good ones, yes.
More than everyone in our orbit will make in their lifetime.
Yeah, more than McDavid and Draisaitl combined this season.
Yeah.
Or close to, you know.
Yeah. But look what you got to do, though. I mean, you got to sit in the bullpen, eat peanuts, chew gum, get yourself ready for...
And only if they're winning.
Yeah, only if they're winning. So half the games are already eliminated.
What if there's a tie or close game, you still bring closers sure. out to you know, late in the game. But yeah, you're talking about come out and maybe throw, what, 25, 30 pitches at most?
I would insist on having a golf cart that's been converted into a batting helmet.
That's how they do it at Nat Bailey.
Yeah, and ride in. Yeah. Ride in from the outfield.
Yeah, that would be good. It'd look pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. While they play my entrance music.
Yeah, don't even
kind of like this. This is the second best thing.
This is, yeah,
I don't get the $20 million.
Yeah.
I'm just shy of that. Just $20 million shy of that.
Yeah.
But I get the entrance music. Yeah, so that's pretty cool.
Just $19.99 million, you know, shy of $20 million per season.
How's my segment going so far?
It's great. I mean, you've avoided talking about the team. But it's not like we need
on,
to
I
avoid
just looked it up.
Okay.
The best closer in the AL this year, Emmanuel Clase. I don't know how class. He pitched 74.1 innings this year.
74.1,
which is pretty light. 162 games.
Yeah, that's a
class A apparently. Sorry,
an inning every second game.
Yeah,
I could do that. 15 pitches.
15 pitches.
Now, how much did he make, Bick?
Oh.
Well, he's, I mean...
Stand by.
Sam, what do you want to ask me?
All right. I mean, hey, we don't need to necessarily avoid talking.
$2.9 million.
Oh, bargain.
He's probably because he's...
I'm not working for that.
He's in his service year still, right? Yeah, yeah, that's what it is. That's why.
I'm not ready for that.
I'm not pitching for that.
Get me Pat Brisson.
As far as the Canucks tonight, the head coach... he was about as critical as we've heard him so far this year. Mentioned how he didn't like that they didn't stick to the game plan. And he said towards the end that if they don't clean things up, that's how you start getting into a bit of a losing streak. Not to say the coach is worried, but I don't think he's been enamored with their style of play and structure since game one. And tonight, I don't think he was any more pleased, despite the fact they came back and got a point.
Yeah, since the first period of game one, to be specific.
Yeah,
it felt... like a bit of a step back. You know, this morning and after the Pittsburgh game, let's remember the Pittsburgh game, you know, great entertainment, and we read a lot into that victory because the scoring was so dispersed, mm-hmm. because it was driven by speed and transition and you know, outnumbered rushes. But they got four goals in 6 minutes, and Pittsburgh got three goals in the other 54.
Yeah.
And Vancouver wasn't so good at the beginning. They were two in their end in the third period. And so there were lessons, you know, air quotes, learned from that game, or at least available to be learned from that game. And this morning, the theme from Tocchet and a couple of the players was about, you know, getting that 60-minute execution. And I usually don't quote people when they talk about playing for 60 minutes because it's such a cliche. But they
basically worth $2.9 million.
They basically they've made it to this point without playing really a full game. I mean, they were good in Florida, mm-hmm. when Florida was missing their two best forwards. They've been good in most of these games at times, and certainly during this winning streak, you know, they've done a lot more good than bad. Let's put it that way. But they're still not getting their full game. They're still not executing
the way that Talk it wants. He talked about, you know, protecting the guts of the ice after the Pittsburgh game. And so they come in tonight with this in mind, like, you know, be ready from the start. Let's execute fully from start to finish. Play with urgency and focus from start to finish. And then they're outshot 13-5 in the first period. Yeah. They're down 2-0 through 22 minutes. And really, the only reason they were within two goals in the third, or sorry, not 2-0, 3-1. The only reason they were within two goals in the third is because Lankinen was outstanding again and made a bunch of five-star saves. So I can understand if it's frustration that Tockett's feeling, and coaches don't like to say, just like I don't like to use cliches, they don't like to use the word frustration because it implies that they're maybe out of ideas and getting exasperated by their players. But if he's feeling something like that, I can understand why, because, you know, lessons are good as long as you're learning and you're moving forward. And tonight, the lessons feel remedial. It feels like we've already been here.
Yeah.
Now, all that said, we're 8 games in, so 10% roughly of the schedule. And they have all these new players who are trying to incorporate, and that on an individual basis, you go through them. Some have been really good. Some have been really tough so far. But we're getting near the end of October, and I can see why Tockett would be concerned, because at some point, if you don't start finding a way to apply yourself consistently and play to the standard that everybody expects, including the players. It's not just Tockett telling. The players are telling each other as well. If you go long enough without reaching that, well, now you've got a new identity. Now it's no longer just, well, we're just struggling a bit, or we're in transition because of the new guys. Now you got a serious problem that you've gotten away. You've lost that identity. Now, again, only 8 games, so it's too early to say that. But each one of these games, like tonight, where, you know, fantastic at the end to get a point from a team that's a perennial Eastern Conference contender, but, you know, poor in the first half. Every time you have a game like this, it raises that urgency a little more to get beyond games like this and start playing. You know, start playing like we saw last year, and we haven't seen much of that this year so far.
Yeah, I just thought it was just the idea of buy-in too, and that he referenced, hey, we had a game plan, we explained it to them for 2 days, and the execution wasn't there on the game plan. And look, it's early, and maybe this is more of a nip it in the bud type of press conference, but nevertheless, like, that should just kind of raise some eyebrows of, hey, like, there's a certain standard that wasn't met tonight.
Yeah, well, I mean, he can only afford, for what we've just been talking about, he can only afford just to let this go so long before he takes more action as a coach. And I always go back to something he said in an interview, I think it was at Prospects Tournament, so it was even before the main training camp, where as a coach, he's got to be harder this year. That, you know, through this first season and a half, you can't be on the players all the time, and there's a lot of learning. And so you let things go. You don't let everything go. You don't even probably let most things go, but you do let some things go. And he said this year, there's probably going to be less leeway for that. That everybody's leash is going to be shorter, and he's got to be harder on them as a coach if they want to get to the next level. We're not even talking about, like, you know, we are talking about, can they play like last year? They want to play better than they played last year. So he's talking about not only be a 50-win or 109-point team, although he probably doesn't look at it in terms of those numbers, but he wants them to be even another level ahead. From which means they're two levels behind right now, because they're not at last year's level, let alone this next level that he wants to get to. So I can understand the urgency on his part.
Yeah, and you know, the reality is sometimes those things take a little bit of time, but you can't just wait for it to happen. You have to start establishing those things, especially when the standards are high, well, and they should be high.
I do think you need to find different peaks in the season, right? You're not going to be your playoff peak at all points, but you're probably going to have a 7-game winning streak. You might have a 3-game losing streak. You're probably going to have a 5-game winning streak, and they haven't really hit a peak right now through 8 games.
Well, what they did last year, and there's a lot of parallels. If you just look at, you break down the games, even the road trips and some of the opponents, you know, last year when they went to Florida and that kind of got them going after they were 2-2 mm-hmm. through 4 games, and then they had the 8-game unbeaten streak. There's a lot of parallels, but what they had, the great thing they had last year is they played their best hockey at the most important part of the regular season, which for them was in the beginning.
Right.
Right? Trying to rebrand yourself.
Yeah.
Trying to set new standards, trying to build an identity that hadn't existed in this market for years. It was critical that the team do well at the start. And except for those first 4 games, and even in that, you know, that was the wipeout win over Edmonton. Yeah. There was some great moments, but their worst game was in those first 4. Other than that, they got to top speed in a hurry. Right? By game 8 last year, and I haven't even gone to see who they played in game 8, but that was halfway through their winning streak. They were pretty well humming along at that point, and they built so much. They put so much into the bank in the standings and in their psyche, you know, their confidence and their self-belief, and kind of did all the heavy lifting of this rebranding in the first couple of months of the season, so that when they did have problems later on, and we know that they did, there wasn't any kind of panic about it, right? They were confident in who they were and what they were. They never had to worry about, oh, geez, where are we in the standings? Where are we in the playoff race? There was none of that. If you're going to struggle at the beginning, as long as you know you're coming out of it, it's okay. But how do you know you're coming out of it? It feels like it's more important to establish that identity or reaffirm it. And again, talk it once to be even better. So it's, again, not just good enough to be as good as they were last year. It wants to be even better. I think the beginning of the season, everything is magnified. And if it goes well, that has benefits beyond just getting the points. Yeah. If it goes poorly, it's detrimental beyond just whatever you see in the standings.
Yeah, and I think it's also clear that he's more concerned about process than results. Not to say you don't want results, you need results, because you can, you know, be out of it early in a season. But even last year, the last 20-30 games, they weren't getting the same level of results, but I thought they played their best defensive hockey at the end of the year. They became an elite defensive team, and obviously getting Lindholm made them a force with the 3 centers down the middle and how they played.
But only in the playoffs.
In the playoffs, right? And but, you know, as far as, you know, defensively, they weren't getting results, but they had a clear identity. You knew every night it was going to be hard to play the Canucks. They were great defensively, and you weren't going to get a lot against them, even when they lost. That hasn't happened yet, and I think that's what they need to get to. And as far as beyond their 5-on-5 play, the PK has been stellar. So, and again, tonight, a great PK. The power play is obviously an issue, and he mentioned he's going to make a couple of changes, and he said they're not working hard enough on the power play. I think it's pretty safe to say that Hughes, Miller, and Besser are probably not coming off the first unit power play. That leaves Garland and Pettersson. He stopped himself with Pettersson. He's mentioned he didn't like Hoagie at all. Then he went to Pettersson and kind of stopped and said, I don't want to single out that line. But could we see something drastic, like Pettersson coming off the first unit power play?
Yeah, absolutely. Was there not a point last year, just before the drama of his contract, where he came off the first unit? I think there might have been a game.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen in the past, Brock hasn't been on the top unit.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, Connor, even though I don't think Garland is at all the problem here, although Garland tonight didn't like his game at all. He said he was crap, and it was hard for him to process what the team did, because he felt so bad about his own performance. But I don't think he's been the biggest problem, but he is probably the most replaceable piece. They look like they've fallen into the same trap that they had at the end of last season in the playoffs, where they're so preoccupied with making the play, right? Their set plays and trying to you know, finesse pucks through people and trying to set people up for the big one timer, and they're not adapting and being flexible, which is what Tockett had talked about coming into this season. Remember how much already he's referenced the Oilers' power play. Mind you, they're having their own problems right now, but I'm pretty sure the Edmonton power play is going to be fine. But he's talked about how Edmonton, you know, once if there's a broken play or a rebound, so now everyone's out of position, how they attack and they jump on that. They don't reset and, oh, no, we want to work our play for the Draisaitl one-timer from almost the goal line. They just go, right? They improvise and adapt, and there seems to be that lack of creativity again. And I think confidence is a huge part of that. Like, it's, you know, you need to take risks to be creative, and it's easier to fall back on, okay, let's try and remember what once upon a time worked, where we pass it back to this guy and he passes it over to this. But I mean, Bo Horvat's long gone.
Yeah.
Right. They're still trying to find somebody for the bumper. So I think they have to be confident and brave to try and be creative. And I think that Tockett will change some pieces there and give other people a chance.
Yeah.
And I actually like, you know, one of the things they've lost, sorry to interrupt. One of the things they lost when they put Garland onto the top unit is in those first couple of games, it actually looked like they had a dangerous second unit, and it played so differently than the first unit that it was a good kind of 1-2 punch. And since Garland went to the top unit to try to get the top unit going, the second unit just hasn't really looked like it's generating anything. So maybe you get two units going again if you put Garland back with the second unit guys and try somebody else on the first.
I just feel like they've also lost an extra shooter on the first unit power play, because if Pedersen's not launching a lot of attempts, Garland's more of a facilitator. Miller looks to pass first, and he's obviously willing to shoot all the time, but it's from such a distance. DeBrusk or Sprong in that spot to me is someone that's always going to try to be active to try to get the puck towards the net.
Yeah. Well, I mean, those guys are playing power play. You're speaking specifically the first unit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe that's what they try. I mean, maybe Arshdeep Bains gets a chance there. He's a guy who shoots the puck and has been an offensive guy.
Yeah.
I think they just need to be more direct, more assertive, and attack the penalty kill. Didn't it feel like tonight, and Carolina is an exceptional team that way, like their speed and how much they pursue and press, but didn't it feel like the Canuck power play was the one under attack?
Yeah, when there was like two chances, they're the ones, one chance,
you know, where, oh my goodness, they're under pressure here.
Should we and go that, here? Should I do this?
And that's the penalty kill doing that to your power play.
Yeah.
It should be the other way around. You have the extra player. You have to put them under duress. And the Canucks right now with, you know, the play around the perimeter, and again, sometimes trying to overthink plays and finesse pucks through people, they're not putting the penalty killers under enough pressure.
No, they really haven't, and that's something to really fix for Wednesday's game against the New Jersey Devils. That brings us to the end of the show. Ian, always a pleasure. Thanks for making some time for us here on the postgame show, as always.
Well, thanks for having me on. Thanks for waiting. Thanks for going to 11:30.
Hey, listen, we are never past going overtime for good content, so
we gotta get our Emmanuel Classe fix.
And sometimes you'll do it even for me,
of too, course. So. Listen, like, hey, we don't call you the triple threat and the closer for nothing.
Yeah. How did television go tonight? You know, Bick and I aren't on.
it was. I'd say I put in an average performance. I'd say tonight, so I'll try to be better.
Maximum performance on the ice.
Glass half full or half empty?
Yeah, I'll be half full. Why not?
All right.
Or why not?
Why would you choose to look at it as half empty?
Yeah.
I don't know.
No. All right. But we got to get out. Bick,
that's a big philosophical question, Bick, as we're about to end the show.
We'll save that for 11:22 next time.
Yeah. Bick, I'm not sure what show you're going to be on tomorrow. Depends on Dan Riccio's health.
If it
we'll
is People's Show, Yannick Hansen and Mark Schofield. If it's Canuck Central, I'll let you say what's up tomorrow.
Yeah, well, we'll see what's going on 4 to 6 tomorrow. Special thanks to Lena here at the Rink producing. Special thanks to Elon and Eddie back at the studio, and all of you for listening, participating, being part of the show. Always a pleasure. We can't wait for Wednesday's game between the Canucks and the New Jersey Devils. This has been the Canuck Central Postgame Show, brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. Canucks.com. Thanks for listening on the Home of Your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.